Sourcing for innovation, making sense of the rapidly changing worlds of artificial intelligence, workforce development, and digital transformation.
Sourcing for Innovation, episode 36. My name is Adam Curtis, joined today by Chris Sorrell, Director of Technology Services at Catalyte. Chris, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It is starting to feel a little bit more like spring. I like that trend, except for the allergy part of it. I don't know how things are quite in bloom yet up in Rhode Island, but I'm guessing you have a few weeks left until that hits you.
Yeah, we're starting to feel it. But did you get to see the eclipse?
The eclipse was pretty cool. I was very nervous. We had heavy cloud cover up until about 3 minutes before peak, and then it cleared. So I get to sit out in my front driveway and see it. We were about 88%, I think, in Baltimore. How close were you guys?
We actually went up to Burlington, Vermont. So we were in the totality, which
very
is
nice.
Amazing. What a great experience.
I think I underrated that. Everything that I've seen, everyone who I know went to there says it was literally a life-changing experience to see some of that. So I don't know, in 45 years when it comes back around here in the United States, maybe I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, sounds good.
We are here today to talk about designing for data. Before we get into that, just give a little bit of your background, what you do at Catalyte, what you do for our clients.
Sure. So my history is in application development. I've been doing application development for almost 20 years now in various forms, starting with early web technologies and going on into a lot of business applications. For Catalyte, I am director of technology. And so largely what that means is I make sure that, you know, where our engagements are, optimized in terms of the technologies and the team and what we're doing. I provide a backstop in terms of technology support and guidance for all of our consultants, and help to set the tone as far as where we're going with technology and how we do what we do.
Well, we're going to talk about where clients are going to go with their data in terms of technology today. So much of the conversation that we hear around data is really the end of the line. What are we going to do with our data? How are we analyzing our data? Where is the data in a graph, in a chart? How are we looking at this? How are we visualizing it? But to get to even that point, you have to start a lot earlier in the process. You have to start very early in the software development lifecycle, thinking about data, designing for data, if you want any chance of putting it to actual use. So where, and maybe the answer is at the very beginning, but where in the SDLC should an organization start to think about data as they start designing their software, their solutions, their systems, et cetera?
You really need to be thinking about data from the very beginning, really, as you're visualizing, as you're starting to address, you know, what problem you're trying to solve or what you're trying to derive. The reality is most applications, particularly business applications, are fundamentally about data, you know, both in terms of solving problems, but also how that data gets used downstream to derive business insight and, you know, optimize. So, in this context, a lot of times we're talking about business intelligence versus the, you know, transactional nature of maybe, systems. And so in that case, I always talk about that. It's really important to understand the questions that you want to answer. And that's the first step. Understanding what questions you want to answer drives how you structure your systems, what data you collect, how you relate it, where you put it. And so I think that that's something that you can do before you've even thought about whether you need an application. So starting there gives you the right frame for how you design your systems for outcomes.
Is it a bit of a chicken or an egg situation? How do we know what questions to ask if we don't have the data there to see what we maybe have collected before? Or is it simply, these are the questions writ large in a business that we need to have answered, no matter what systems, what applications, what data we have available? So let's then build the systems 100% to just answer those questions. What is the give and take between those two different angles?
I think it is a bit of a give and take there. You know, what I would say is that we can't always identify the ways that we're going to want to use data. But there are really some common use cases that we can always anticipate, right? So companies, you know, they always want to look at sales data to try to figure out what's happening, where the market's going, what their customers' buying habits are. If they're, you know, supply chain heavy, they want to look at their ERP and their supply chain systems and see if they're a place for operational efficiency. You know, and likewise, if they're content based or user interaction based, they're looking at what their users are doing, what content they're interested in. And all of that is really around how do we optimize that experience for users? How do we optimize our business, make it more efficient? And so I think that, you know, you can start there. And generally speaking, the line of business that's trying to move forward an application knows the questions generally that they're not able to answer or that they want better answers for.
So should it be that line of business owner who is leading the question writing exercise? Is this a company-wide thought process? Is this, you know, a Delta team or a scrum team, for a lack of a better term, within an entire organization to try to figure those points out? Because I'm guessing that data should not just rest in the silo of one business unit. That's going to affect other different business units as well. So who's on the team to write these questions?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it starts with the line of business that's moving it forward, because they're experiencing a problem, right? Software is fundamentally about solving a problem, a pain point. And so they're really close to it. But to your point, they don't always necessarily have the broader context of how that data could be used in other cases, whether we already have some of that data, so I think that there's kind of it depends on the size of the organization, obviously, and larger organizations have more policy and framework around this. But, enterprise architecture organizations can be very helpful for that. I think that a lot of times, though, when we get back to that concept of what questions to ask, the business drivers don't always know the right way to frame that. And they don't always know kind of how to dig into deeper questions around it. And so I think that that's a place where, very data specific types of resources can be really helpful to dig at that, you know, do the business analysis and ask questions in different ways. And then, you know, interface with your IT organization and other, you know, stakeholders to try to understand their perspectives and concerns.
And while I know it's important to get some of these questions done up front, I'm guessing that this is not the only time in which you can look at or refine these systems as they're being developed, as they're being designed, after they've been implemented. Should the mindset almost be like this is an MVP version of it? These are the main or biggest questions we can think of now, but that doesn't preclude us from having the data answer different questions and different variations in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say when in doubt, we should always hew towards collecting more data than less. If we have it, we can derive something from it. If we don't have it, we can't go back and get it most of the time. And so I think that that's a really important piece, is just saying, okay, these are the primary use cases that we're addressing. But if it's easy for me to add some additional collections, some additional relationships in there, I should do it, because I don't always know where I'm going to go with this. And I think that that's, incredibly valuable. And one thing I'd say about this is that beyond just the sort of giving yourself the ability in the future, you're talking about cost mitigation, because it's far costlier to try to link up unrelated or loosely related data that you've already collected if it doesn't have hard identifiers, it doesn't have, you know, a good structure. You get into things like fuzzy logic and confidence scores and places where you're trying to infer whether something is accurate or not. And that's not a great place to be versus setting yourself up for success from the beginning with that.
The cost piece makes a lot of sense. Is there a darker flip side to that, that the more data you collect, you're not quite sure what you're doing with yet? Does that present a security risk, or maybe even a compliance risk in certain situations?
Absolutely. You have to understand the regulatory and security environment that you live in. If you're business is handling PHI data, you know, healthcare data, if it's handling credit card information, PII data, information about, minors, all of that is both, you know, ethically and security wise a risk, but also a lot of times a legal framework that you have to abide by. And so, that definitely goes into what data you collect and what you can do with it. As you're starting to kind of design what that process looks like, you might be looking at how can I anonymize this? How can I disconnect it in ways that, can't be traced back to a personally identifiable record? Things like that become very important.
And throughout this conversation so far, I've had in my mind a greenfield environment. And I'm realizing now that that's probably not the case for most organizations, most enterprises. They're not building up from scratch and able to ask the questions and build the systems in a totally free and open environment. So what is the difference there between doing something completely net new and trying to ask these questions, design for data, when you already have existing systems? And maybe it's not developing something new, but it's modernizing or optimizing existing applications.
Absolutely. We're almost never designing purely greenfield. Even if we are designing an application from scratch, we're often working with systems that are well established. And so I think that, we can answer most questions just with the data we're collecting or have within transactional systems. Where we sort of have challenges there is that it does cost more. If we have to extract that data and transform it and try to line it up with other data, that can be challenging. And it also, there are certain things that you just can't collect after the fact. And so if you think about maybe you want to evaluate how some user interacts with your system over time. Well, if your data in your transactional system only gives you the current snapshot of or the current state of that user, you can't go back and find out what the prior states were. And so that's a place where you may not be able to answer certain questions that you would say over a time dimension if you haven't been collecting that data from the start. And but what I can say is that the best time to be collecting that data was a year ago. The next best time is now, right? And so it may be that you just have to sort of draw a line in the sand and say, okay, we can start collecting that data today. And that's going to allow us to have those sort of time dimensional insights.
Yeah, you don't want to handcuff yourself because you haven't done it before. You want to be able to build the best possible system now, regardless of what the past state was.
Exactly.
Build towards the future state.
Yep.
How do companies think about AI in this process? I'm assuming you've probably run into some who think that AI is just going to be able to synthesize all this data, no problem. We're going to buy something off the shelf and it's just going to magically work with all this. I'm guessing your take on that is probably, good luck with that. But where does AI fit in with the designing for data, process here?
Yeah, that's a question that's near and dear to my heart right now. We're dealing with that a lot. So without taking forever, AI is a pretty loaded term, and it means a lot of things to a lot of different people. I think that the two places we can pay attention to is sort of machine learning and what we might call generative AI. And so we'll look at generative AI as kind of the first one, right? So that's your ChatGPT type of experience where you're looking at an AI system. It's a very textual heavy system. It understands language and it understands how to produce language that humans can understand. Right. And so we all think about that and we use it and it's a marvel. Wow, this thing just wrote an amazing paragraph for me, or it gave me some really good information. But what is behind that is that those large language models aren't great at analytics. They're not great at producing, insights on the fly. They're just good at finding information, right? So what an LLM is really smart about is taking the terms that you use, unpacking them into a broader context, and then using that to retrieve data and then formulating a human readable response. You know, essentially that's, they grew out of search engines, and that's what search engines do well. But when we're talking about using AI to go against transactional systems or structured data or do analytics, it doesn't know how to do that. And so you have to have a design that includes a middle layer of sort of converting and translating and doing that analytics and putting it into a format that you can train your generative AI against. And that's a, there's a strong discipline there around model training, about designing the gold standard questions and how to work with that. So I think that's a you know, a core piece is understanding how do you position your data so that a generative AI system like a chatbot can use it.
Yeah, the positioning piece and the clean data piece, I think, is one that's often people overlook. That just the AI is going to fix this. It's going to take all this and it's going to do that. But if you have everything just in different formats, in different values, again, I guess AI can figure out, you know, column headers and maybe rationalize it. But that ability to normalize the data, to get that clean to feed into the model, is going to be the important piece here if you want AI to be a major factor or the major factor in your ability to, you know, design for data or to make that data more actionable for you.
Of course. I mean, it's garbage in, garbage out. And, yeah, and you know, that's ultimately an axiom that we deal with in data all the time. So, you know, we can't discount that effort and the key resources that support that effort when we're trying to leverage AI. And I would like to say, you know, the other piece that I mentioned is, you know, machine learning, and that's really the data scientist part of it, right? And so we want to lean into some really heavy capabilities, you know, human capabilities around designing analytical systems that can process massive amounts of data and identify it and sort it and categorize it. And that piece, you know, ultimately LLMs, generative AI, all of the things that we use for AI come from machine learning. And so that piece, you know, the good news is that we've come far enough with that, that there's a lot of systems that can do a lot of the heavy lifting for you, but you still need to know how to train your models, how to generate your data, how to collect that data, where it should live. All of those things go into how easy it is to leverage machine learning.
How long of a process is this initial, going back to the question answering phase or question generating phase, I should say, and really building out what sounds like to be a plan before you actually start to build and implement it? What are you looking at in terms of people involved with that? Timelines, knowing again it's going to be variable given on the size of the organization, but is there a ballpark or is there a recommendation for how much resources or budget someone should put against that part of this process?
I mean, unfortunately, there's not. It can go, you can spend your entire budget on it and still not have spent enough. The reality is that we're always dealing with business constraints, and so what I would say is that you need to narrow the scope enough that you can have a milestone to meet. And so you might look at, you know, if I already have the data and it's in generally good condition and I just need to, you know, design an analytics system and then move it into, for example, a data lake or a search index for AI, you know, that might look like a 3 to 6 month engagement or project. Whereas if you're looking at an enterprise-wide consolidation, you're looking at things like master data management or, you know, policy and framework and all of those things, you can spend years on that and, you know, and need to. So I wish I could give a one-size-fits-all answer, but the reality is that, you know, your best bet is to try to look at the whole scope and then break it down into actionable pieces, measurable, project goals and milestones, and then, you know, align your budget and your timeline to that.
different lengths for different projects, but the importance of that is still the same regardless on size, budget, etc.
Yeah, if you just say, oh, we'll deal with reporting later, and you call it reporting and you're not thinking about it as business intelligence and all of those things, you're always going to be limited at the end. So your success at the end is largely driven by how much upfront work and planning you do.
Talking about success, if you design for data well, what does that outcome look like? And if you design for it poorly, what does that outcome look like?
It's kind of easier to say what success looks like. Honestly, if you design for data well, and I want to say if you design for outcomes well, it leads to cost optimization, operational efficiency, actionable insight and flexibility, right? And those are kind of, again, loaded terms, but really, if you do this right, number one, it doesn't cost as much as if you don't do it wrong. But beyond that, our goals as a business are typically operational efficiency. How can we do our work faster, more efficiently, and for less cost? And how do we sort of predict the market? How do we understand our consumers' behavior? How do we understand where the market's going? How can we identify problems before they become catastrophes, right? And then how do we adapt to that quickly? And so designing for outcomes gives you better results on all of those axes. Similarly, if you design for data poorly or you don't think about it ahead of time, one of the biggest issues you'll run into is just cost. It costs more to design ETL or transformation systems that get the data out, try to link it up to other data. Maybe you have to, leverage AI to try to understand your data in ways that you wouldn't have to if you had, implemented a good schema to start with. Right. So all of that goes into cost and longer timelines, which then means your organization isn't as flexible and adaptable to evolving business conditions. And the other piece I would say is that there's just some data that you can't, or some insights that you can't derive because you never collected the data in the first place.
I can imagine the cost too. The more people you need to do something at a more manual level is going to cost you as well, when you could have set the systems up to be more automated from the beginning.
Absolutely.
Lastly here, I'll get you out on this question. What would be your top piece of advice that you give to clients who come to Catalyte looking to set up their systems correctly to normalize data, capture data, analyze data, present data? What is the number one or number two things that you tell people that they need to know about this?
Yeah, I think we've been talking about it. I would say you need to design for outcomes. To the degree that you can plan your data process to address how you want to use that data, you'll be more successful in that effort. And we've talked about that. It starts with what questions do you want to answer? And then it leads to how do I answer them? Do I have the data? How do I, think about this? And ultimately that planning for that outcome is going to lead to success. And then I would say the second piece is that there's always unknowns, right? Who saw AI coming as quickly as it did and as broad reaching as it did? I think, a handful of people maybe really saw the impact. And so we didn't always necessarily plan for that. And so I would say, collect as much data as you can, of course, as is reasonable, right? You have cost constraints, both in terms of how you implement it and, things like storage and, cloud services costs and all of those things. But, within your budget and timeline, collect as much data as you can. And when you're collecting it, make sure that it is adequately related to other data. Looking at things like common schemas, common keys, master data management, agreement on terms, all of that stuff, to the degree that you can do that ahead of time, that will make you much more successful in the end.
Chris Sorrell, Catalyte's Director of Technology Services, thank you so much for this conversation. I see this probably as a beginning. We'll probably have some more conversations about designing for X, Y, or Z, I'm sure.
Absolutely, I look forward to it.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chris.
Great. Thanks, Adam.